RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 184 with guest Clint Huffman, recorded Thursday, October 14th, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. I got Greg Hughes.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Okay, so you want to talk about an abnormal computer problem?
Is there anything other than...
I think there are normal computer problems. There are normal blue screens and things. Here's a really abnormal problem. As you may know, I water cool my PCs to keep them quiet.
Yeah.
So, and I, you know, there can be problems with water-cooled PCs. And I have sensors for the water temperature, so it'll shut down if it overheats and, all those sorts of things. So while I was on the road a few weeks ago, the power plug for the pump for my machine fell out. The water stopped
for
pumping.
For the water pump.
Yes, the water pump. That would be bad. But so.
Yeah, that could be bad.
Where the temperature sensor was in the water loop never got hot because it was the water wasn't pushing past it, so that water stayed cool. So the machine stayed on until it melted the seals inside the CPU jacket and the video jacket and plugged up the water lines.
That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
It's not cool, but you know.
Thanks for that. It changed the color of the water. That's something. But I've been gradually swapping out the plumbing inside that machine to keep it running.
Wow. But so it didn't cook the processors and stuff?
Oh, no.
Like
the
that,
hard Because in the end, the hardware itself will shut off if it really overheats.
And
it did eventually shut down. There are shut down thresholds on that. But, you know, long before that, I think the water got to about 90 degrees Celsius. It was coming on boiling before the thing actually shut down. So this is not a normal, it's a very abnormal problem.
No, that's a mechanical failure. That's really just a mechanical failure is what that was.
Yeah, got to keep the pump plugged in. So that's what I've been battling.
But how did it get unplugged?
That's a good question. I do not know. All I know is when I was digging through the machine trying to figure out what was wrong, I found the little Molex adapter that's supposed to be plugged into the pump, not plugged in. And when I plugged it in, then weird things started to happen.
Gremlins. All right.
I need a little miniature roto-rooter for my water cooling now to go through and clean the lines.
Well, congratulations on figuring that out.
So, yeah, no, I'm not really happy about it. I have to tear the whole machine needs to be gutted and rebuilt.
I had a case where the fan on my video card decided it just didn't want to work anymore.
No more round and round.
Yeah. There was not obstructed. It had no dust in it, no problems. It just decided, you know what? I'm done doing my job.
Yep.
And of course, that fried the video card, which then fried the PCI slot, which then fried the disk controllers, which then fried my two very large hard drives.
Nice. That's a domino effect if there ever was one. I got a story.
All right.
Then we can talk about that guy that just spoke up. But I got a quick story. So here's my unusual hardware problem recently. And in fact, I'm actually expecting FedEx to show up sometime here today, delivering it back to me after repair. But so I have a MacBook Air notebook computer.
Right, the little skinny one.
Yeah, it's a great little computer. And I was on the road, didn't take it with me, but I was on the road for a couple of weeks, got back about a week and a half ago. Went to pick up the notebook off the desk upstairs in my office, and it was all swollen up and bent.
Oh,
like the case. Like it was the trackpad had a big bulge in it, the keyboard was bulging up, the bottom of the case was all bulging out. Turned out that it was the battery, which is, you know, built into the notebook.
Right. Very built in.
Well, very built in. It's replaceable, but it, you know, you have to open it up and you have to go through the process. Well, the battery had swollen up and bursted inside its casing and started to, and it blown up inside the notebook. So that bent everything. So that's another domino effect thing, you know. So it damaged the trackpad, damaged the keyboard, cracked a couple of stuff on the circuit board, all that kind of stuff. The good part of it is that I took it down to the Apple store,
yeah.
in Portland here, one of the Apple stores. And they took one look at it and they said, we'll be right back. And they wrote it up and they said, look, we're going to send it off. You'll have it back in a few days and no charge. We're going to fix anything that's wrong with it. We'll just fix it.
Nice.
So,
because, you know, if that, that's, if that battery had burst its packaging, it would catch fire. Right? That's a, yeah, that's a lithium ion battery. Like, that stuff burns.
Yeah. And so I, you know, I mean, if nothing else, then, you know, in the end, it's just not yet another good experience for me. I've had some good experiences with Apple as a company in terms of providing service and making things right. And so, yeah, it's probably worth mentioning. I really appreciate that about them. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Just replace a new one. Hey, we got Clint Huffman on the line and well, he's been on the show before. Yeah. So what more do we need to say except a Windows performance geek?
That's right.
Just the guy who really introduced us to the wonders of the premier field engineers.
Well, actually, that was, who was that? It was somebody else that actually brought us, that actually got us into PFV.
Right.
And then I kind of followed on. It was Choi, Stephen Choi.
Yeah, Stephen Choi, I think, was the first one. But then, he, you know, he sort of revealed this little community here of guys who work for Microsoft but are out in the field actually making apps work and making systems work, and I've come to appreciate your mindset about how to get things done.
Yeah, that's what we do. We don't really all we do is just we're just geeks that go on site and help you fix a problem. So it's what's fun about it.
Yeah, it look to me it seems like one of the best jobs at Microsoft. It's very real.
Oh, it is. Yeah, and it's actually kind of I love the job because I don't really have much responsibilities. I don't have to worry about servers. I don't have to worry about this. All I have to do is say, okay, I'll go on site and help you and do whatever I can to help you and, you know, end up that I don't really have a server at the end of the day that I'm responsible for or any real responsibilities other than really just helping people. And it's a really good feeling to help people.
It's cool.
Like I can tell you from coming from the police world many, many years ago, that's the difference between being a patrolman, like working on patrol and being a detective. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I feel like a detective. I feel like a doctor a lot of times. You know, unlike the medical industry, I can kill the patient, resurrect it, and not get sued.
Yeah, and unlike being a cop, by the way, you can't be a cop for too long and not get sued. But good point.
So, and Clint, you're also the driving force behind performance analysis of logs, PAL. So when we talked, a year ago, you were coming out of version 1 and working on a version 2, just trying to get all updated to the latest OS and using PowerShell, getting away from log parser. And you've shipped? You've done it?
Yep, we finally shipped. It's RTM'd as of probably about a month ago. And I'm proud to finally get it out of beta for almost a year. It's been in beta. And, you know, beta is really kind of another term for just, hey, we haven't done a whole lot of testing with it.
Yeah.
That's what it really means. And so RTM basically means, okay, we actually did some testing and now it's out there.
So, now we believe this works in enough cases that close enough.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's review for those that maybe haven't, because we haven't talked about it in a while, and maybe introduce for those that are new to PAL. Can you give the Reader's Digest version of what it is and why it is?
Sure. Well, it is a tool to make life a little bit easier when looking at performance counter logs. As you guys always have said, is that the performance monitor is kind of like our own little internet. You just have to know what to look at and how to judge it, and that's what this tool pretty much does.
Actually, I think I said what I said was, it's like the internet, everything you need to know is in there, you just can't find it.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, I didn't quote you right.
Well, and that's the frustrating part with that tool is, how many times have you thrown up a bunch of counters? Well, first off, it's like, what counters do I grab? Then I grab way too many, half of them never change. For everything, you know, it's like, I don't know what I need to measure. And then even when I find ones that change, you come down to the real issue, which is, what do these numbers mean?
Right. It actually applies meaning to the counters. And it actually gives you some quite good visuals, too. In the first version of PAL, it was all VB scripts, and I used Log Parser and Office Web Components to create the charts. And in 2.0, I moved towards .NET 3.5 with PowerShell 2.0, and I used the MS Chart Controls, which used to be a Dundas technology. because you see them on the back of the MSDN magazines, you know, Dundas and stuff like that. Well, Microsoft purchased licensing for them, and now we freely give a kind of a basic version of those tools as the Microsoft chart controls for .NET Framework 3.5. And so since those chart controls are free and I can use them, I decided to go ahead and move towards that. And lo and behold, they got some really good charting technologies in there. And I was able to call and use those charts through PowerShell. And matter of fact, I also found that I could actually put thresholds on the charts too. So now I have these yellows and red gradients. So now that you can actually see, you know, yes, I'm running out of memory, and I can actually see us going into the yellow, and now I can actually see us going into the red. So red is kind of an indicator of bad, you know, or yellow is an indicator of bad, and then red is an indicator of really, really bad. And so you can actually start seeing that in the charts visually. So as an IT professional, it's kind of easy to convey to management. It's like, okay, well, we used to be in the green, now we're in the red, and here's the chart that shows that, you know. So it's a lot easier to convey those problems to management.
So just a way to visualize the progression of, a memory leak or drives getting buried, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's the idea, is that it does detect memory leaks. Matter of fact, I had a room full of mathematicians, well, actually a virtual call of mathematicians. And I'm like, okay, all of you have gone through math and had 4 years of it. You know, how can we do a predictive trend with memory leaks? And no one would agree
right.
on that kind of thing. So I end up coming with probably a very weird algorithm or formula, whatever you want to call it. And it end up calculating slope in a very weird way, but it ends up working pretty reliably. So anybody who wants to see what I did, they just have to open up the PowerShell script and then look at the calculate trend function, and they'll see what I did.
They get a sense of that. So when you talk about thresholds, where this is a combination of both counters for given products and then what reasonable numbers are for those products.
Correct. The idea here is that we have a vital signs workshop which teaches Windows architecture and how to look at thresholds and stuff like that, but it's a lot of work to go through a performance counter log and look at all those things. So this tool does a number of things. First, it allows you to pick a particular threshold file such as Exchange, SharePoint, SQL Server, Active Directory, whatever Microsoft product that you have in mind. Also, by the way, we do have third parties starting to add stuff. As a matter of fact, Citrix folks are going to have a threshold file for PAL pretty soon.
Nice.
Too.
Oh, cool.
So I'm actually trying to get a hold of VMware to try to get them to add one as well, and we'll see how that goes. So, but anyway, you pick a threshold file of something, and like you said, what do we gather? Well, the threshold files that you pick here in the tool, you can pick it and then choose Export to Perfmonlog Template. And in there, you can pick whether it's a Windows 2008 or above server, if it's a Windows 2003 XP type of machine, or if you want to automate it with logman.exe, which is a way of creating logs in mass remotely. So you can actually export those threshold files to those counter log templates. Once you've done that, you can go out and gather those logs for a given amount of time when you have the problem. Later, after you've captured those perfmon logs, you then can copy them back to your workstation, feed them to PAL using the same threshold file, answer a few questions just like what you would to a doctor, you know, as far as answering, you know, blood pressure and stuff like that. In this case, we have processors, memory, and stuff like that. So you answer those questions, and then it produces a pretty detailed report showing where the counters had broken thresholds and such.
So on one level is the Windows side, but the other level is actually getting into the specific products. I mean, you talk about VMware and so forth, but stuff like SQL Server and Exchange and SharePoint, Moss.
Yeah. What's also kind of crazy is that anybody who's doing Exchange lately have noticed a huge influx of performance counters. I don't know if you guys have played around with that much.
I've admitted before, Exchange is the only product I fear, yet I run 2010. And they really instrumented the snot out of it.
Yeah, you're not kidding, because Mike Legassi, who is the real Exchange expert, he's the one who's in charge of the, who owns the Exchange thresholds in PAL. And he recently gave me an Exchange 2010 threshold file for PAL. And I looked at this thing and I'm like, are you kidding? And there's literally like hundreds of analyses in here of all these different counters. I mean, I think we probably have 1,000 counters in Exchange alone. And at this point, you know, you just don't have the time as an IT professional to go through this, you know, through a manual way in Perfmon anymore. You got to have some automation at this.
Right. Well, and as an IT pro, your time is much better spent rather than having to weed through and find it all by hand and try to correlate it. Your time's better spent getting the answers than trying to solve the problems, right?
Yeah, it's basically the idea of taking my car to get fixed, and you know, you don't really care about the molecular structure of the pistons or the viscosity of the oil. You're just like, okay, it's broke. Please fix it and let me know what you did and how much it cost.
Yeah, and even I don't really care what you did. I'm just glad that it fixed and how much it cost and when do I get it back.
Right. I still like your example, Richard, when you had the interview by Carl where you're like, you know, yeah, I can fix that problem for $2,000.
Yeah. I'm just going to get a new machine. Yeah. Let's focus on the – and I think one of the challenges we as tech people deal with is we actually like solving problems. They're our best days, those days where you've got a problem to gnaw on and you can just hammer away at it, to the detriment of the overall goal of reliability of infrastructure, that we can get gnawing on a problem and ignore everything else.
Right.
But I think the biggest issue I deal with Perfmon, as soon as we get to any scale of any kind, is just finding out, is there a problem here? That you're always going to have numbers, but are these good numbers or bad numbers?
And the beauty of this tool really is that at any time somebody who says, hey, we just captured this counter log from SQL Server, and then they're like, hey, we want you to find out what's wrong. And if you're a deer in headlights, you're like, hey, I've never done Perfmon before.
Right.
I've never looked at this stuff, and I don't even know what to look at. You really, all you got to do is just feed it to PAL. It'll do all that work for you. You don't even have to open it up in Perfmon, and then it'll give you some direction on what you need to look at, and even gives you information on where to find out more information about those issues. So.
Right.
So if it's really that, you know, forgive the term, but if it's really that brain dead simple, you know, and it just makes sense to use PAL, are they using it a lot at Microsoft now, or have you seen an uptick in terms of actual use just inside, or what's going on there?
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on, especially internally. This thing, obviously, the cost of this thing is a big driver for people, too. It's a free open source tool on Codeplex.com, which is Microsoft's open source website. So a lot of people are like, well, why would I want to use a free tool in my huge infrastructure? We would rather buy a supported, you know, tool that's out there. And that's a whole other story. This is literally a grassroots type of project that me and a bunch of other subject matter experts in PFE, we just decided, you know what? We just want to make life easier. We don't care about money. We just want to make the life easier for ourselves and analyzing these counter logs and for our customers. And being a grassroots effort and everybody and PFEs, us on site using this thing constantly, customers are starting to pick up on this and are like, hey, this is pretty cool. And next thing I know is that I've got some Microsoft product teams asking me, hey, how can we integrate this into Windows? How can we integrate it into our other development products?
Wow.
Stuff like that. So I was really honored that they took that they're actually looking for feedback into their own tools and stuff.
Yeah, that's exciting stuff. Well, you wonder, it's on Codeplex. I mean, not that Codeplex is inherently evil, but there's a statement made there when you say it's on Codeplex rather than a sort of traditionally supported Microsoft product or even as part of the many tools that are available inside of Microsoft that are free, the, you know, Windows performance analysis tools and so forth. I mean, it's in a different place, and that says something about it, and not necessarily bad or good, but you've got to think differently.
Definitely, and the reason you got to think of it is that I basically wanted control over the tool. Once you get a lot of money behind it, like millions of dollars behind a particular product, then there's a certain expectation of being pretty rigid on standards and making sure a good look and feel. And there's a little bit of control loss when that happens too, between, you know, the grassroots effort versus, you know, what we have to do for a look and feel. Microsoft has a reputation to meet. And the idea here is that if Microsoft wrote this tool as an official tool, and it says, yeah, the Exchange server we is having a problem with this particular counter, and this is a problem. Well, there's a certain expectation that if Microsoft says that, then it must be true, and million-dollar decisions might be based on that.
Right.
So what I'm trying to do using CodePlex is to say, look, you know, these are just things that we in the field feel are problematic, and take this information with a grain of salt, basically. You know, so there's no liability on us. There's no liability on Microsoft. It's just like, here you go. This is, you know, how we do it, and this is what we've got.
Well, and, I'm looking at the CodePlex website, and here's a classic example of a difference between a CodePlex project and a Microsoft project is you haven't worked on globalization at all. You run under the English US locale, and that's it for now, unless somebody wants to contribute that. And Microsoft actually makes a pretty serious effort to support globalization on their products.
Yeah, and that is definitely the biggest feature request for PAL 2.0 is making it both globalized and localized.
Right.
There is some big challenges with that. I've even talked to the Windows product team about that several times, and the challenges is getting all of the counters that exist and getting like the German version of that, the Spanish version, and just getting all those and being able to translate those counters. It's a pretty big effort. There's a guy named Sven who actually wrote the platform, the Perfmon translator tool, PLT tool, I think it is. It's up. It's actually one of the downloads on the PAL site. And he wrote that so that any log that was recorded in any other language that's non-English could be converted to English and then ran through the PAL tool to be analyzed. And that's kind of our kind of shim that we have working for that right now. We have a guy out in the UK called John Greaves, who I definitely wanted to do a call out to, who's out of the goodness of his heart is contributing to the tool. And he's not even Microsoft. And he's working on a lot of that globalization and localization problems for
us. Wow.
And that's the beauty of having an open source, product like this is that I get great feedback from users who actually say, "Hey, look, I found this line of code in the script that's causing a problem, and here's the fix."
Yeah, I think that's just that ability to contribute back to it and to have different people focus on different things. We walked around this once, but I'd like to get back to it, which is the paid versus free product. So Microsoft makes a set of tools called System Center, namely System Center Operation Manager, which to me seems like it ought to do a lot of this anyway.
It does. As a matter of fact, that's the big iron way and approach, because it actually can go out, has agents on machines, can gather this information. And there's a lot of, matter of fact, they do have management packs that cover all of what PAL covers.
Right.
So that's the idea. Do you want to do one-offs with PAL using counter logs, or would you rather have agents in System Center taking care of all that for you? So there's been a lot of influence.
I see. So they mean, and let's face it, System Center is not free. It's pretty much the opposite of free. It is
right.
You pay per server. There are some significant expenses in there, and it's good that it has some instrumentation. You know, the other thing I've encountered is Studio 2010, the test suite in it, has a bunch of performance counter thresholds. So when you do web testing, it'll actually do the same thing. It'll mark up certain counters after the test and say, this, the classic one for when you're doing web testing is your ASP.NET request queues got back filled up. It went above, I think the threshold warning is 2 and critical is 4. And a hammered website could easily have 200. So, just the fact that I'm used to demonstrating that tool and saying, okay, here's the numbers you want to look at. Here's what's important. And the first time I ran it in 2010, it just spat the number back at me. Look at this.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been, let's just say there's been some influence there.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? You can't.
Well, that is one of the product groups that did ask me about PAL and how we can do some integration.
So nice.
There's a couple others, but I'll just remain anonymous with them. So. But there's been quite a few. I just don't want to get any legal problems by talking.
Right. And it's interesting that these threshold files, they're just external, they're XML files, aren't they? The thing that have the values?
Right, they are. There, yeah.
So not a big deal to expand on them or even change them. I mean, one of the concerns I have here, Clint, is, isn't the correct number when you talk about thresholds, isn't it, it depends? You know, your infrastructure is different from my infrastructure. You know, maybe these numbers aren't that big a deal in that particular configuration. Like, don't you get into situations where you're popping up a number and saying, I don't like this, but that's not an unusual number in that configuration?
That is definitely true. And that's why they call performance analysis more of an art than a science.
Right.
Because of that, it depends. But once you actually confront the people who say it depends on that, I'm like, well, what does it depend upon? Because maybe we can get that or gather that. If it depends on the phase of the moon, and you know, you want it to be, if it's first phase of the moon, it might be okay. But if it's the last phase of the moon, it might turn into an ugly problem. Then we can actually plug that into PAL as a variable and get that to work. And I've been able to actually quantify a large majority of those it depends issues into as questions and variables in PAL.
So part of what PAL is doing here is not just looking at the threshold numbers, but looking in the context of what it's running in?
Well, not what it's running in, but how the user answered the questions and the relationship between some counters. So, for example, high context switching is not a problem unless you're seeing a high amount of CPU. And that's even not a problem unless it's really a high privileged mode CPU. And so there's a lot of factors that you have to consider and the number of processors.
Right.
So all those variables I just mentioned are actually variables in that particular threshold. And then that it depends now becomes a scientific fact, or at least close enough to it, saying this is now a problem that needs to be looked at.
Right. So, I mean, you need to know how many processes are involved in something before you can really talk about how much context switching is an abnormal amount.
And people may go further, and we're just trying to do the 80% rule. I mean, context switching has a lot to do with processor architecture and the hardware and things of that nature, too. But I don't go to that level. I certainly could, but then I'll be asking the user a marathon of questions, which will kind of take away from some of the simplicity.
Well, and often they don't necessarily know the answers to all those questions either. I mean, some of those questions are not simple to answer. Just in processor count alone, now that hyperthreading has creeped back into our lives, do you count those hyperthread cores as separate cores, or are they not counted? Like that's an interesting problem.
I do count them. I do. So basically, I say, look, just whatever you see as far as processors and task managers is what you'll answer for that question.
Right. So any favorite analysis is using PAL 2 you could tell us about?
Well, we just, Exchange 20, 2003 was originally in PAL 1, and I recently just converted it over to PAL 2. That was a huge request, especially because we do a lot of page pool and non-page pool analysis. Exchange 2010 will also be included in the release soon. So there'll be two major threshold files coming out. The OCS, has a whole suite of different, roles and configurations. And I'm going to be, working with Doug Dietrich on getting all those converted to 2.0. David Plus actually spoke at, SQL Pass recently about SQL Server and how to use PAL. Analyze SQL Server, so that was kind of a big plus there too. One other call I wanted to make while I'm talking about that is Jeffrey Snover, who actually invented PowerShell, has also contributed to the PAL tool since it's a pretty large PowerShell script. So that was pretty cool that he actually contributed to the tool.
So can you tell us a bit about what he contributed?
He basically added a check to make sure that it's PowerShell 2.0, because that is required.
Yeah.
He also added a parameterized function which is new to the PowerShell 2.0, where you can actually do argument types and such. He actually added that to see, because one problem I had in PowerShell was being able to check, does an attribute, an XML attribute in the threshold file actually exist?
Right.
Because if it doesn't, I want to use a default value. The problem was is that if I try to retrieve that attribute with it not being there, we'll actually get a fault and an error and it'll crash.
Ooh.
So he wrote this function that's like a test function that actually says tests to see does this attribute exist first, and then if it does, then I actually retrieve that value.
That's good. That's pretty useful. Keep the app from crashing. Cool. You know, another feature I've been reading about, but I don't know that I quite got my head around it yet, is the ability to generate counters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a cool feature. I use it specifically to calculate percent network utilization.
Oh.
We actually don't have a counter that tells us how much network utilization we have going on the server, on each network adapter.
Right.
So we have bytes total per second, and we have current bandwidth that tell us what we're connected at and how much we're pushing through it. But we don't have an actual counter to tell us that. So PAL has the ability to take these counters, run them through a formula, and generate a whole new counter, which I've appropriately named percent network utilization.
Cool. So you could take any combination of counters and build an expression out of it and make a new counter from.
Oh, definitely. And it actually worked very well with SQL Server as well. In the SQL Server, many of the counters are like, well, if your total scans per second is X and your total batch requests per second is this, then you're doing too many scans per second. And so what I did was I actually got those counters and many of those analyses, put them together, creating a whole new ratio type of value. And then I use that to chart that value, as well as putting this threshold on the chart. So it actually worked out really well in the SQL analysis.
Interesting. So that under certain workloads, you may blow that percentage out, but most of the time it's running just fine. So just being able to narrow in on there may be a certain queries that run at certain times of the day only that really mess with that ratio.
Right. And yeah, if you get like 10 full scans and you only had maybe 100 batch request total that happened at the time, then that's a hugely bad ratio, and that's going to flag it as a critical at that point.
Yeah, it's a time to go look at it and say, hey, is there an index that needs to be built here, or what are we doing wrong?
Right. Yeah, what's funny is like many of the databases I run this against, as far as SQL databases, especially with the... I won't name any products, actually, but certain products at Microsoft
I can think of a couple myself, my friend, actually. One in particular that's notorious for full scans.
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm using so we have in PFE, we go on site to do these health checks.
Right.
One of them is on SQL Server, and so I implemented all the rules that we do in these on-site visits we do with customers. And so then I applied those rules to certain products, other products at Microsoft, and sure enough, they light up like Christmas. So again, I won't name the products because I don't want to get that discussion.
Yeah, you don't need to be yelled at that loud. Amen. Do you pass that back to the team, or do you just write an if product then?
No, I leave it exposed.
Okay.
If I've gone to the product groups and I said, look, this is what I'm seeing and stuff like that. And it's one thing to hear from me. It's another thing to hear from our customers. So our customers start saying, look, PAL is saying this and this and this with this product. Are you guys going to be able to do anything about it or fix this or not? Fix is a bad word. It's kind of more of why is it showing up this way?
Right.
Especially,
this is a known set of issues. When a third-party application exhibits this behavior on SQL Server, we talk to the developers about how to do things differently.
Right.
So why wouldn't we do that with internal products, too?
Yep.
Clint, I think we're on the path to hell here. I think we need to go.
Yeah.
So the PAL is at pal.codeplex.com.
Correct.
And we'll make sure we get a link to your blog as well for folks who want to know more about PAL.
Yeah, I'm also working on a separate project on the TechNet Wiki.
Oh, yeah?
I'm working on what's called a performance guide and the idea for it is that PAL needs kind of an overhaul when it comes to the content that it has in there. Whenever it detects a particular threshold, I kind of generically have some real simple next steps. But I don't really go into detail. And so instead of having the user get spammed with lots and lots and lots of text in each of these analyses, I decided that I'm going to write up all of the next steps that I can think of into the TechNet Wiki and on the Microsoft site and have PAL link into that. So if you have this problem that PAL detects, then you can click the link, and it'll basically take you to this wiki, which is really like a wizard. It says, okay, you found yourself here because things were detected in this particular manner. Here's your next steps, and then you can follow those links, which take you to another page. Oh, you found yourself here because of this. Here's the next steps. And you keep doing this until you eventually, hopefully, come to resolution.
Cool.
Yeah, it's like choose your own adventure for PAL.
Yeah, that's exactly, and that's how I originally started my blog. I actually started this effort on my own blogs, but I thought, you know what, it's kind of it's probably better suited to be on a public TechNet wiki than my blog. And I figured I'll have to just have my blog now just linked to that.
And also letting letting
cool.
some of your cohorts like Jeff Stokes and others contribute to this as well.
Oh, yeah, Jeff is just a master when it comes to SSV and Microsoft XPerf and stuff, so I'd like to get his feedback on all that, too.
Awesome.
I can't be an expert in everything, and we rely heavily on each other here in Microsoft and to help out customers.
Yeah. Clint Hoffman, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It was great having me here. Thanks.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.